You may have noticed that punching in with a time card is not the only way to track an employee in 2019. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. What do you do with time on your hands after Thanksgiving? Meet with friends, hang out with family, and maybe shop and act with economic significance. Christopher Lowe, the chief economist at FTN Financial in New York, is getting work done on this Friday. Thanks for helping us out, Chris.
Good morning, David.
We were talking earlier today. You were arguing that consumers on this big shopping day could spend more if they wanted to. Tell me about that.
Well, that's right. Look, income growth is holding up pretty well. But the last couple of months, consumers have pulled back. Retail sales were basically flat 2 months in a row. But the savings rate is high. It's risen up to about 8%. And even measures of consumer confidence don't give you a lot of information. We look at two primary measures, one by the Conference Board, another one by the University of Michigan. The Conference Board numbers have held up just fine, but the University of Michigan numbers have declined over the last 6 months. So my sense is that consumers have the wherewithal, but it's not at all clear, looking at the data, that they will spend. So it's going to be touch and go until we get the early reports on how weekend shopping went.
Now, you and I could have a longer conversation about overconsumption and wasted resources or something on this day after Thanksgiving. But for the economy, as it currently is set up, it's important that consumers contribute this quarter.
Well, it's critical because business spending has been lousy for 6 months. So it's pretty much consumers carrying the economy. And what's kind of striking is that this is a note that reporters picked up with Fed Chairman Powell when he was so certain at the last Fed meeting that it was appropriate to stop easing, to let the economy run. It really is a very narrow growth that we're seeing in the U.S. right now. And the biggest risk is if consumers take a break, there's really nothing else keeping the economy going.
Christopher Lowe at FTN Financial, thank you very much.
Thank you, David.
From Sydney, Australia to Berlin, Germany, protesters are taking to the streets today in a series of global climate demonstrations organized by a movement called Fridays for the Future. The protests come with world leaders gathering in Madrid on Monday for the United Nations Climate Change Conference, COP25 it's called. It's about next steps to follow the big Paris Climate Agreement. The Trump administration has filed the paperwork to pull the U.S. out of the Paris emissions commitment. My Marketplace colleague, the BBC's Victoria Craig, has more from London.
At the 25th annual conference, nations will come together in hopes of finalizing their climate targets. Sebastian Treyer, executive director for the Institute for Sustainable Development and International Relations, says the talks are at a critical stage.
We need to have major emitting countries being able to announce ambitious commitments and ambitious implementation at the same time.
Countries include those in the European Union as well as developing nations like Brazil.
I believe the business community in Brazil is very much interested in not appearing as those who are making the Paris Agreement fail.
Indeed, the question is whether governments will match business commitments. That's the view from John Denton, Secretary General of the International Chamber of Commerce, which is the official voice of business at the COP25. It represents 45 million companies globally.
Businesses prepared to lead can governments lead, and we need them to lead. They're the ones who legislate, not business or civil society.
He said through an ICC pledge, 10 million businesses have committed to supporting net zero carbon emissions. In London, I'm the BBC's Victoria Craig for Marketplace.
Now, since the Great Depression, federal law has required employers to keep track of when workers who are eligible for overtime come and go. That requirement was a golden ticket for Latham Time Corporation, based in Atlanta. The family business just celebrated 100 years of selling time clocks. But as Jim Burris reports from WABE in Atlanta, the time clock's time may soon be over.
When you think of punching into work, you might picture the Latham 2100 series, a gray metal box with an analog clock on the front that's been the company's bread and butter for 70 years.
It uses mechanical wheel technology to actually imprint and stamp the time.
Lance Whipple is in charge of sales and marketing.
You can find up to 5 Latham time clocks in over 2,000 retail stores throughout North America. So we're real proud of that.
But if you want a mechanical time clock for your office, buy one quick. CEO Bill Latham says its time has run out.
2 years ago, we made a very difficult decision that we were going to get out of time recording, manufacturing of time recording completely.
Latham trimmed 40 jobs, and today, only a portion of its revenue comes from actually selling time clocks. Much comes from monthly cloud subscriptions that track and tabulate employee work hours. And while the mechanical clock market isn't a crowded field, cloud-based time and attendance is. Companies that survive will be those that can take logging hours to the next level, says Novo Mana. He's with the International Association for Human Resource Information Management.
The ones that will distinguish themselves is the ones that's giving the customer really strong analytic metrics and even predictive analytics.
So not just when an employee clocks in, but also what tasks they're doing and if they're likely to, say, request off next Friday. Latham says the next step is to have smartphones do all that work.
And it has an optical finger sensor.
For now, employees still have to interact with a time clock.
Employees simply put their finger on the sensor.
Clock out.
And it'll clock them in or out automatically.
But maybe we need to coin a new phrase. Fingerprinting in for the day just doesn't have the same ring. In Atlanta, I'm Jim Burris for Marketplace.
This is the day when the holiday lights go up, and for some, the trees go up at home. Now, have you seen at the stores or at the local tree lots, upside-down Christmas trees? They look like evergreen tornadoes. Some see sacrilege. Others notice a tradition from the Middle Ages. It's also pointed out that a small one affixed to the ceiling can keep things out of reach of kids and pets. Marketplace's Erica Barris has more.
Upside-down Christmas trees actually go back a long way. Bruce Forbes, author of Christmas, A Candid History, says they were popular in Europe a few centuries back. Only then,
it was probably a smaller thing that would be easier to hang upside down.
The modern incarnation is just another trend, like silver trees or trees with shorter needles, according to the National Christmas Tree Association's Tim O'Connor. But this one is practical.
It clears up a little bit of floor space because the largest part of the tree is near the ceiling.
This trend has been driven by social media. First, high-end hotels displayed them, and those made the rounds on Instagram. Alex Barash is a professor of marketing at NYU.
This is kind of the classic trickle-down effect of things that start off being fringe and cool and trendy.
But now they're in big box stores. And of course, that's politically controversial. Former Trump campaign manager Corey Lewandowski told Fox News the upside-down trees symbolize everything that is wrong. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
At a big TV debate in Britain on climate change last night, on stage there were 5 political party leaders and 2 melting ice sculptures to represent 2 party leaders who chose not to participate, including the Conservatives' Boris Johnson, who is prime minister. The Conservatives are now mad, accusing the commercial TV network Channel 4 of bias. There's a UK general election in less than 2 weeks, and as we said earlier, there's a UN climate change summit ramping up this week in Madrid. Our executive producer is Nicole Childers. Our digital producer is Miguel Contreras. Our engineer is Jay Siebold. Our fellow is Erica Soderstrom. I am David Brancaccio. This is the Marketplace Morning Report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.